Chapter 5. Savior. Rewriting the Code. The Veil of Grief. The ether matter of Ahriman's tower had reshaped its form in his absence. His power had raised a spiraling horn of white stone, but left to its own devices, the tower had become an ugly agglomeration of polyhedral impossibilities. Its interior was a twisted labyrinth of doors to nowhere, infinite pathways and endlessly tessellating chambers nesting within one another in defiance of perspective. Atop the tower's highest chamber, Ahriman walked a slow circuit of its perimeter, scoring the walls with a black-bladed athame to inscribe the sign of Thothmes. The wonder, he hoped to work, was to remain hidden for now. The raven cloak of his fellowship mantled his shoulders, and he bore as many touchstones of prophecy as he possessed, a scarlet robe woven by the mother oracles of Iyalawo, agate from the reflecting caves, a wooden eye cut from the hull of a Levantine bark, the waxen seal of the Mirabilis Liber. The floor was polished basalt, cut with 9 concentric circles. Robed in the hooded raiments of their fellowships, Hathormat and Sanakt walked in opposition to one another, pouring lunar caustic into the circular grooves, innermost to outermost. At the centre of the warding circles stood a frosted stasis casket. Sobek remained just as Ahriman had last seen him on the Torquatum, terrified features frozen by Pavoni Artes and held in that moment by the power of technology. Fresh from his work healing Menkaura, Apothecary Penthu knelt by a hinged panel in the casket's side. Insulated cables linked his Narthesium gauntlet to its inner workings.
"It's done," said Sanakt, wiping the last grains of powder from his palms. All 9 circles glittered like diamond dust in the light of fires held within floating crystal thuribles.
"Are you sure?"
asked Ahriman, sheathing the athame.
"It is but a simple ward circle," said Sanakt.
"And there can be no errors."
"Says the adept who broke his own ward circle," said Hathormat.
"Remember how easily Astenu goaded you?"
Ahriman nodded. The comment was fair. He had allowed a warrior corrupted by the flesh change to provoke him into an elementary error.
"And that will not happen again."
"It better not," said Hathormat, "or I'll have Sanakt here put his pretty swords through you."
Ahriman ignored the threat and turned to Penthu.
"Apothecary."
Penthu toggled a final switch and nodded as a series of gem lights changed from green to amber.
"It's ready,"
he said, standing and turning to face Ahriman.
"The integral Medicae functions are primed to take over as soon as the field disengages, but I want you to know that I do not approve of this."
"You would rather we did this without you?" asked Ahriman.
"No. If you cannot halt what is happening to Sobek, then I will see him ended with mercy, instead of in the Pyrrhi's fire."
"Which is to your credit. But I do not believe it will come to that," said Ahriman.
Penthu grunted, and unholstered his bolt pistol anyway.
"Sanakt, Hathormat," said Ahriman. "Ready?"
"I am,"
replied the swordsman, standing directly in front of Sobek's casket.
"Let's get this done,"
said Hathormat, taking up position to Sanakt's left and rolling his shoulders as though about to go into battle. Ahriman stood to Sanakt's right, his thought processes becoming more fluid and abstract as he sought to push past now and perceive yet to be.
"Both of you move your minds into the second enumeration,"
said Sanakt, a mist of power gathering behind his eyes and sighing from his lips.
"Not the third,"
said Ahriman.
"No. The second allows transfer of thought at near instantaneous speeds. It is my understanding this needs to be swift, yes?"
"Absolutely," agreed Ahriman. "Speed is vital. Hathormat, you must follow my visions immediately."
"Show me the way and I'll guide Sobek back to us."
The silver of the circles took on a shimmering undersea quality as all 3 adepts drew the power of the great ocean into their bodies.
"Apothecary,"
said Ahriman,
"disengage the stasis field."
Penthu pressed a combination of gene locks on the casket's side, and the field vanished. Preserved air from the Torquatum gusted outwards, bearing Sobek's last breath. Hathormart grunted as the burden of restraining his hyper-evolution now fell to him. Sobek's eyes snapped open, wide with fear.
"Garamond!" he cried. "It's here! Stop!"
Blue ice webbed the floor. The carven sigils on the walls burned with Hathormart's expended power.
"Hurry!"
said the Pavoni adept through gritted teeth. "Do it!" said Ahriman. "Conjoin!" Sanakt lifted his arms and placed a palm on Ahriman and Hathormart's shoulders, a conduit between Corvidae, Seersite, and Pavoni biomancy. Ahriman drew in a frozen breath at the chill of Athenaean power, like razor steel sheathed in ice. Shadows slithered on the walls, things from beyond sensing the gathering power within. The sign of Thothmes would keep them out for now, but not indefinitely.
"Quickly open your thoughts,"
said Sanakt, his voice like clear water slipping over time-smooth stone.
"I am the key and the gate, the end and the beginning, the twisting path where two minds become one."
Ahriman felt the infinite complexity of his brother's minds join with his own, the ordered precision of Sanakt's and the maze of ever-shifting perspectives that was Hathormart's. The Pavoni had a changeling mind of innumerable facets, already slipping its moorings as it prepared to do battle with the flesh change.
"We are one," said Sanakt.
It felt like leaping from a cliff. Letting go of the present and casting his mind into the future was to abandon certitude and plunge into an infinite ocean with only the slenderest tether to guide him home. All too easy to be carried far from familiar shores by the great ocean's onrushing tides, beguiled by the prospect of witnessing futures so far distant that the anchor of the present was ripped away, and a mind untethered could never return to its body. Ahriman moved his mind into Sobek's flesh, feeling the screaming ambition of his body straining at the bounds of Hathormart's power. His own flesh responded, eager to cast off the stolid nature of its own rigid form. He savagely quashed its hunger for change, following the billions of potentials branching out from the genetic anarchy of Sobek's anatomy. Every change produced millions of possibilities, and these multiplied at a geometric rate every second. In some futures, the changes caused Sobek to bloat with tumours, flesh splitting and new limbs exploding from the morass of warp-infused meat. Others saw him assume variations on a specific form, avian, winged, and yet somehow reptilian. Ahriman discarded scores of futures in every heartbeat, shifting his focus as it became clear each ended with Sobek's death. Hundreds of potential futures flashed through his mind, each a screaming nightmare of bulging veins, organs exploding, and flesh reshaping in ever more horrific ways. Sweat streamed from him, but he barely felt it. To seek one future amongst a potentially infinite number was a feat to tax even the greatest of the Corvidae. Since coming to this world, he had not found a cure. But the blood toll of his researches had shown him definitive markers beyond which even transhuman physiology expired. Ahriman discarded such futures instantly, exploring those that offered fractionally more hope. Each blood and pain-filled death he had witnessed taught its own lesson in suffering, lessons that might yet save Sobek. And if one could be saved, all could be saved.
"Give me something to work with," said Hathormart.
"I can find nothing," he replied.
Futures branched and divided faster than he could follow. He viewed as many as he could, knowing it would never be enough.
"There must be something."
"Every change I see kills him."
"I can't hold it back much longer," said Hathormart. "Just find the best you can."
"The tiniest misstep will have enormous ramifications I cannot predict."
"He dies either way, so just choose, damn you."
Ahriman steeled himself to make hard choices. He had eliminated millions of potential futures, but that still left him with a bewildering number of possibilities. Left with no other recourse, he calculated the odds of each option and sent Mart the alterations to Sobek's genetic structure that offered the best chance of survival.
"I see it,"
said Hathormart. Biomantic power surged from Hathomart's mind, plunging into the deepest elements of Sobek's physiology, breaking apart cells and the very building blocks of existence. Held fast by the casket's restraints, Sobek thrashed in agony as Hathomart's power ripped through him. The Pavoni Artes were tearing him to pieces before rebuilding him from his core. Ahriman felt the soul-breaking agonies of his practicus and shut them away in the deepest recesses of his psyche. To feel what Sobek was feeling would be too much to bear.
"Stop this!" cried Apothecary Penthu. "You're killing him!" "We're saving him!" roared Hathomart. "Ahriman, end this!" demanded Penthu.
"No, we stop when it is done," said Ahriman.
The fates were changing according to his foresight, and repercussive pain raced around his body as the seismic shifts in Sobek's physiology echoed within his own flesh.
"I'm ending this,"
said Penthu, raising his pistol to Sobek's forehead. Ahriman's hand shot out, and the bolt pistol instantly disassembled itself into its component parts. Shells, slides, magazine, cheek plates, muzzle and trigger guard clattered to the basalt floor.
"We stop when it is done," repeated Ahriman.
"Damn you and your arrogance, Azek!"
Ahriman ignored the apothecary's fury. It was a distraction, and he had no time for distractions. With every alteration Hathomart made, fresh branching possibilities opened up, and he soared as the morass of futures that ended in horrific death for Sobek dropped exponentially.
"It's working!"
he cried. Sobek howled in pain, his body spasming with agonies of the damned. The casket's Medicaid system shrieked with alarms. Biohazard warning symbols appeared on every one of its slates.
"Don't stop!"
replied Hathomart, the strain evident in his mind as it began to buckle under the pressure of rewriting the Emperor's code of life itself. Hathomart exulted in his power as it reshaped Sobek and shut down every aberrant avenue of unnatural evolution. Human beings have been altering the evolution of lower species for millennia, but never with instantaneous results. Early artificial selection had domesticated wild beasts and plants since time immemorial, yet this was surely the greatest example of humanity's ingenuity. Sobek's fate was becoming more certain with every passing moment. Ahriman strained at the limits of his power, and Sanakt's arms trembled with the effort of maintaining the telepathic bridge. Mart was triumphant, knowing that none before him had ever accomplished so magnificent a feat. The biomancy of the Pavoni was a wondrous gift, but its boons were usually fleeting. The natural tendency of life was to maintain its form and function. Life resisted change, not its own. But this was the irrevocable altering of the most complex living form imaginable. Gene code authored by the Emperor of Mankind. Who but the Thousand Suns dared tamper with the blueprints of his creations? Despite the pain of Sobek's rebirth, Ahriman grinned. Hathomart was going to be insufferable after this. At last he saw what he had been searching for since they had come to the planet of the sorcerers, a means to reverse the irreversible. Sobek's fate was his own again, no longer dominated by rampant mutations and the agonies of horrific transformation. The branching fate lines were falling away like fragments of a shedding chrysalis.
"It is done,"
he said to Hathomart. Sanakt dropped his arms, gripping the hilts of his swords as though taking strength from them. Ahriman flinched as the bridge linking him to Hathomart was broken. A curious mix of relief and regret settled upon him. Mart's mind was not a place to linger any longer than necessary, but feeling power that could reshape life and govern its development was to know the reach of a god. An intoxicating feeling, the seductions of which were all too obvious. No wonder the bodies of the Pavoni were always in flux. No wonder they were all strutting peacocks. Hathomart let out a bray of exhausted laughter and sank to his knees, drained almost to destruction by their magnificent achievement.
"We did it!"
he said, hoarse but elated. Ahriman nodded and blinked away the monstrous afterimages of fates that would never now come to pass. Horrors beyond any he had seen, staring into the depths of the great ocean, or encountered on alien worlds. Sobek hung limp in the casket, his head low over his chest, his flesh waxen and glossy with oily sweat. Rasping breaths shuddered from his lungs, and the veins in his neck squirmed like angry serpents. Even from several meters away, Ahriman felt transhuman heat radiating from his skin.
"Apothecary," he said. "Is he right? Sobek lives?"
Penthu's narthesium had remained connected to the stasis casket's Medicaid systems throughout, and his eyes darted back and forth as he processed vast swathes of information.
"Every biometric is dangerously elevated, but yes, it appears you have managed to avoid killing him," said Penthu grudgingly. "Avoid killing him?" said Hathelmat. "Throne, we saved him! There's no apothecary alive could do what we just did."
"We don't yet know what you did," said Penthu.
"Then you would have let him die?"
"I would not be so reckless with another's life," snapped Penthu. "Not when the true cost remains to be seen."
"Then you are a coward," said Hathelmat.
"Enough," said Ahriman. "We succeeded. Let that stand as testament to our achievement. Let us..."
Sobek's head snapped up.
"All is dust," he said.
The last of the sigils on the wall exploded in a blizzard of ether fire. The great ocean's tides surged into the chamber with all the spite of a jealous lover come to claim their due. Sobek's eyes bulged and his mouth stretched wide. Sinews snapped and cartilage cracked as breath roared from his throat with furnace heat. Ahriman spun Hathelmat to face him.
"What is this?"
"Nothing of my doing,"
said Hathelmat, pulling away. Cherry red lights built behind Sobek's eyes, and the heat of burning flesh drove Penthu back. The casket rocked with Sobek's convulsions as his face was seared black with internal fires. His screams were piteous, enduring beyond what should be possible. Bones fused and snapped in the heat of this new and terrible transfiguration. The searing fire in his eyes grew too bright to look upon. Sobek gave one last shrieking wail, a cry heard all across the planet of the sorcerers. The chamber fell silent, save for a soft rustling like sand through an hourglass. Ahriman looked up and despair touched him. Sobek was gone. All that remained was his armor, split and broken by the power that destroyed him. Dust poured from the cracks, and no crematorium had ever been so thorough in its destruction of a human body. Drifts of grey heaped around the armor's boots as the dust spilled from the casket. Capricious winds stirred it, and Sobek's presence in the world faded like a guilty whisper.
"I do not understand," said Ahriman.
"What is to understand?" said Penthu. "You killed him."
"No. This was not his fate,"
said Ahriman, unwilling to admit defeat.
"I would have seen it. I saw his flesh remade. I saw him return to us."
Ahriman felt the vast presence within his tower an instant before it spoke.
"You were deceived, my son," said Magnus the Red.
And suddenly he was there, the Crimson King in all his wisdom, resplendent in golden robes and feathered cloak. Red of skin and keen of eye, Magnus was clad as he had been in the moments before Prospero's raising. Ahriman knew he should kneel, should prostrate himself on the floor and beg for mercy. Instead, he remained standing. What use was humility in the face of his Primarch's wrath? Success would have vindicated his actions, but failure had damned him as surely as it had Sobek.
"My lord," he said.
"Azek," said Magnus, "you disobeyed me."
"My lord, we were so close, we almost..."
"Silence!"
roared Magnus, and the walls of the tower were torn away with the force of his fury. Storm clouds filled the sky to the horizon, the Primarch's rage made manifest in the heavens.
"I should strike you down where you stand for this betrayal."
"If it is betrayal to try to save my brothers' lives, when you leave them to die, then yes, name me traitor,"
said Ahriman, made bold by having nothing left to lose.
"Do with me as you will."
He felt the limitless power of Magnus surround him, power that could crush him from existence in the blink of an eye.
"You will pay for Sobek's life another time, Azek," warned Magnus.
But for now, Ammon requires this cabal of yours. Ahriman let out a breath as he understood he was not to die at his father's hands this day. He felt the killing power of the great ocean bleed away and nodded.
By your command, he said. We go to the Obsidian Tower. No, said Magnus. Ammon is not there. Then where?
Go to the ruins of Tisca, said Magnus. To the last moments of Prospero's doom. The Thunderhawk touched down in a graveyard of black ash. Its skids kicked up powdered bone and woke the whisperers that slumbered beneath the arcing spires of Tisca's rusted pyramids. Blue-hot engines grumbled and strained in their housings, keen to bear the gunship aloft. The Thunderhawk had no wish to be here. Nor did Ahriman. But what choice did he have? His inability to halt Sobek's flesh change weighed heavily upon him. Less for the death of his practicus, more that he had failed when the curse appeared to have been removed. What had he done wrong? What could he have done differently? No answers presented themselves, no matter how many times he relived the grim spectacle of Sobek reduced to inert dust. He had followed every clue within the Book of Magnus, applied every iota of what he had learned from the mutant bodies of those fallen prey to the curse. There had to be something he had forgotten, some crucial factor he was overlooking, a tiny error introduced to his fundamental understanding that grossly affected the final outcome. Whatever it was, it would have to wait. The assault ramp lowered reluctantly, and hot, gritty winds blew inside. Ahriman tasted the lightning dueling in the gloaming twilight, the smell of burned metal and the dry taste of human ashes. His chest tightened at the sight of ruined Tisca. The rusted pyramids of the fellowships lay like corpses in a storm-racked wasteland of black dust, forlorn ruins haunted by the memory of their doom. Transposed from Tisca, their orientation and proximity to one another had changed. Each had once occupied its own district, but here they gathered close, as if to lie side by side in death. Towering over them all was the pyramid of Fotep. Even in ruins, it was magnificent. 2 kilometers in height, its bare steel structure was twisted and buckled by the violence of its transition from Prospero. Remarkably, a profusion of glass remained intact. Glittering blades fused to the frame that reflected sick shimmers of trapped light. Other buildings had come with the pyramids, but the ash buried them beneath moaning cinders, all of them obscured, but for weathered stumps of jutting marble. Ahriman pictured Tisca as it had been, his mind's eye conjuring a sunlit metropolis of polished stone and glass, a city of enlightenment and prosperity, home to tens of thousands of educated, healthy, and contented people. He recalled the food markets filling Oculum Square, and the smells of roasted meats, produce fresh from the mountainsides, honeyed teas and a smorgasbord of hand-picked spices from Prospero's equatorial belt. A flash flood of memories returned to him, sharing fresh-baked pastries with Lemuel at Voisin's on the Street of 1,000 Lions, browsing the dusty shelves of an antiquarian bookseller on Zanoni Mews, each title a gateway to new understanding, each page offering the experience of a different universe. Evening sunlight glinting from the ocean as he meditated in the great park of Fiorento, developing the latent powers of Tisca's citizenry, offering insights and developing mutual trust, elevating others to see beyond their mundane senses. All gone, laid to waste by Fenrisian executioners.
It appears we are not the only ones summoned, said Mancora,
marching down the gunship's assault ramp to stand at his side. The vision of lost Tisca faded, and Ahriman pushed aside the grief threatening to overwhelm him. He nodded and scanned the windswept ground between the pyramids,
now seeing a host of thunderhawks and stormbirds scattered throughout the ruins.
A veritable conclave, said Araman. Do you know why we're here?
I do not, said Mancora,
with just enough of a pause to make Araman wary.
But no good can come of returning to Tisca. Our legion died here. But rather than leave the grief behind, we bear it like a millstone around our necks.
The seer's armor gleamed like new, and the wound dealt to him on the Torquatum had healed. But Araman sensed great melancholy upon him, a resignation to a fate he dearly wished to avoid.
Then why are we here?
Asked Tolbeck, fitting his helmet down onto his gorget. Hathomart and Sanact came with him, the former's aura bitter at their shared failure.
The Crimson King demands and we obey, replied Sanact. What other reason do we need?
Spoken like a true believer, said Hathomart. Do you ever tire of such slavish devotion?
Do you ever tire of your childishness?
What happened to your scarred fencing master? Said Hathomart. Have you learned all you can from him?
Lucius is not my master, snapped Sanact. But perhaps I will tell him that you impugned his skill and watch as he cuts you to pieces.
He could try, answered Hathomart.
Cease your bickering, warned Mancora. The spirits haunting these ruins feed on discord.
Where do we go? Asked Tolbeck.
There, said Araman, as a beacon of ether fire blazed in the gloom at the foot of the Pyramid of Fotep. With great reluctance, he stepped from the Thunderhawk's ramp, knowing he trod on the bones of dead brothers. The others followed him into the clouds of dark ash whipping around the pyramids. Voices chattered on the wind, scratching at the edge of hearing, muttered curses, echoing cries, valedictions and sobbing laments. Glass crunched underfoot, and scattered in the dust were reminders of that terrible day. Broken shards of armour, dust-clogged weaponry, bent kobesh blades and wolf-paw talismans. Spiteful winds exposed cracked skulls from the dust. Balefire smouldered in empty eye sockets, and mocking voices made sport in sagging jaws. Araman kept his gaze fixed straight ahead, trudging through the knee-deep ash and billowing clouds towards the shimmering beacon. The ground trembled as towering shapes moved somewhere in the darkness with booming hammer-blow strides.
The god engines are on the march, said Tolbeck.
Preferably away from us, answered Araman.
On our left,
said Sanact. Tolbeck's fists glittered with fire.
And the right.
Araman's grip tightened on his Hecker staff as he saw the dust-hazed outlines of Legion warriors in their hundreds. The clouds of ash obscured them, but there was no mistaking the suspicion in their auras. Then the ash lifted and removed all doubt. Their fellow Thousand Sons came not in ordered ranks, but in sullen warbands of many sizes. They marched beneath unknown totems and sigil banners never seen on Prospero. They marched towards a broken arch that once led within the Pyramid of Fotep, beneath which Amon floated 5 meters above the cracked marble. The Primarch's equerry was wreathed in fire, his body the beacon that had drawn this warrior host. 9 terminators of the Scarab Occult stood below him, the right lenses of their helms bisected with a vertical scar in honour of Magnus. Each bore a fire-bladed polearm and an opened book, from which they recited complex evocatus of their own devising. Once, these warriors had been Araman's to command, but now they answered only to the Primarch.
How long since the Legion ever gathered in such numbers? Asked Hathomart.
Not since Prospero, said Araman,
letting his perceptions range further afield as he tasted something other nearby, something hostile.
This does not feel like a gathering of brothers, said Tolbeck,
the fire wreathing his gauntlets burning hotter.
Perceptive, said Mancora.
Try not to sound too surprised. He's right, said Araman. This feels more like warring knights gathered under a banner of parley with their swords half-drawn.
The assembled Thousand Sons, 300 at least, formed an arcing line before the broken arch, and the clash of belligerent auras set Ahriman's teeth on edge. The wind's moaning dropped as Amon raised his hands above his head.
"Brothers,"
he said, his noble voice easily carrying over the muttering carried by the dust.
"It gladdens my heart to see so many of you heed this call. Know that only grave tidings will compel our genesire to summon you back to this terrible charnel house."
Ahriman felt Amon's meaningless platitudes wash over him, as something else tugged at his perceptions. Something familiar, and yet wholly alien.
"Where is Magnus?"
shouted a warlord from the host, and Ahriman looked away from Amon. The speaker was clad in intricately etched Terminator armor, and stood at the head of a warband whose placement within the arcing line offered the most auspicious positioning should events turn hostile. Not only that, but the geometric arrangement of each of his warriors would considerably augment their ether powers. Ignis, the self-anointed master of ruin.
"Well,"
said Ignis, when Amon did not respond.
"The Crimson King works tirelessly to save all that was lost when the Fenrisian savages put our great libraries to the torch," said Amon. "As he has done during every moment since we came to this cursed world." "The summons came from the Primarch,"
said a warrior named Mamunim, his aura blunt and pugnacious. Though he bore the title of Seal Keeper of the Fifth House of Prospero, Ahriman knew him by his bellicose reputation only.
"He should suffer this place as we do!"
Amon's fire blazed brighter, and Ahriman saw the equerry restrain his anger only with the greatest effort. The scarab occult lowered their blades, following the equerry's lead.
"Your master suffers like you cannot imagine, Mamunim," said Amon. "Do you think he escaped Prospero unscathed?" "He did not. Laemon Russ broke him. The Wolf King shattered his soul into splintered shards, and every one of them is dying."
A shockwave of horror passed through the Thousand Suns as they read truth in Amon's aura. Ahriman felt the ashes of Tiska respond, a tremor in the rock like the distant echo of a coming storm. Amon ignored the many questions shouted up to him. Glowing cinders spun through the air, spiraling through the spars of ruined pyramids.
"The Crimson King bleeds himself white as he restores Prospero's legacy," he cried. "Every tale, every manuscript, every scroll, all the learning since first we put quill to parchment. His mind draws them from the warp and weft of the great ocean and imprints them on the crude matter of this material world."
Amon burned brighter at every utterance, his grief spreading from warrior to warrior as they understood the enormity of what their Primarch attempted and what it cost him. Again the dust of Tiska's dead stirred, inflamed by the potency of emotion building among the legionaries.
"But the means by which he preserves that knowledge is flawed,"
continued Amon, oblivious or uncaring of the effect his words were having on his surroundings.
"Everything he creates lessens him. The slivered shards of his soul burn brightly in remembrance of lore, but as their illumination fades, so too does he."
Cries of denial rose from the assembled Thousand Suns, mixed with fresh anger at the warriors of Laemon Russ. Somewhere the howl of a wolf echoed through the ruins. Ahriman felt vast power stir in the dust, dark memories and darker horrors.
"He knows this will destroy him,"
said Amon, drifting towards the restless dust and lowering his voice.
"He knows it better than any of us. But what choice does he have? To remain trapped here for all eternity and allow all we once knew to fade from memory? He will not let that happen. Our father seeks to restore our lost greatness, but to continue as he does will destroy him a piece at a time."
Ahriman saw tears glisten on Amon's cheeks, the equerry's voice straining as he sought to convey the immense sacrifice their genesire willingly made for them all.
"We cannot let that happen,"
said Amon, his hands clenching to fists.
"The Thousand Suns must not let that happen."
"What must we do?"
shouted a warrior Ahriman did not recognize, one of the Athenaeans by his emanations. Ahriman looked back and at last saw the gleam in Amon's eye. He recognized it for what it was. Proffered hope. Ahriman stepped forwards and raised his Hecker staff.
But he has a plan, he said. Doesn't he?
He does, Chief Librarian, said Amon, as the howling of wolves came again from all around. But it will require great sacrifice from his sons. Just spit it out, Amon, said Mamunin. We must all lift the veil of grief, said Amon, as the scarab occult closed ranks around him. To make whole the Crimson King, we must relive the day Prospero burned.
And the wolves of ash and fire roared from the dust.